Hey, it's John Gomez of Gomez Trial Attorneys with another episode of Trial Files, where real personal injury survivors talk about their real personal injury cases. And so in each of these episodes, we talk to a client of Gomez Trial Attorneys that suffered an injury, found a need to search for a lawyer, hired us, and then went through that process. You know, we are hopeful that these stories will be helpful to people that suffer injury, that are trying to kind of navigate the legal process. And in some cases, you know, we're hopeful that our guests can provide some inspiration. And so I'm hopeful that today we have exactly that from a strong-minded, strong-willed young person that went through a very traumatic injury and seems to have bounced back strong and resilient, and I'm hopeful can provide some inspiration to all of us. So without further ado, I'm going to introduce my two guests. I'll begin with my fellow Gomez Trial attorney, Corey Garrard. Why don't you say hello, introduce yourself, and tell us a little bit about yourself, buddy.
Hello, everyone. My name is Corey Garrard, trial attorney here at Gomez Trial Attorneys. I grew up with an attorney for a father, a trial attorney as well, who used to tell me only trial lawyers are real lawyers. And so here we are, trying cases and getting after it and loving what we do.
Love it, man. Thanks for being here. And it's true that you were on the team that represented our guest. Is that right?
Yes. Yep.
All right, cool. And our guests, speaking of our guests, we're very humbled and grateful and blessed to welcome Axel Marquez Cornejo, one of my personal favorite clients. So Axel, I want you to introduce yourself. Tell us a little bit about yourself, not the event, not the injury, but just where you're from, what you're all about.
For me, I'm currently a student at UCC. I would say is my primary role. If you have to get put a label on what I am currently, it's kind of evolving. I'm still pretty young, so this is kind of the stage where we're figuring that stuff out, and with the kind of with the life-changing events that currently happen, that's kind of evolving a lot differently, so it's making me change the way I think of things. So in terms of an official title, that's still up in the air, but born and raised in San Diego, so all of my 21 years now, my birthday was a couple of days ago, so all my 21 years have been here in San Diego, kind of bounced around from different areas depending on school, family. The earlier portions of my childhood, I spent more across the border, so in TJ with my grandparents. So when they're a little bit in a little bit of a healthier state, they were a little bit better to take care of me. So I would spend the weekends with them. So I kind of grew from a little bit up in TJ and then up over here more when school got a little bit more intensive. I kind of stayed more with my mom. In terms of anything else interesting about me, I would say some of the hobbies that I like to indulge in are kind of, they're a little translating more, a little bit progressing more to more than hobbies, are trading, investing, with the markets kind of being a little bit wild right now. It's a fun time. And then with the legal settlement, to have a little bit extra money to play with. So I'm trying to be a little bit more intelligent, and kind of, it's kind of catapulting me into a little bit of a stratosphere that I was already trying to go into, but it's kind of adding that pressure, which I enjoy. So it's kind of keeping me active a bit. But in terms of what's going on, that's about it.
Love it, man. And so I think at some level, Axel's being a little humble. You know, from my perspective, what I saw was, you know, Axel grew up in not a wealthy environment. You know, I would say in a financially challenging environment, you know, but did well enough academically to actually be able to be admitted to the University of California, San Diego, which is, you know, a very, very high academic level institution. And as you can see, and you already heard, he's a pretty smart guy. And so, and an inquisitive mind. And so, you know, before we turn to Axel and kind of his story, Corey, like you and I spent a lot of time kind of talking to Axel, and you in particular, you know, and, you know, some clients, you know, they don't want to be involved. They just tell me when I got to be here or there. And some clients, you know, have like an intellectual interest in the process and that kind of thing. And, you know, what would you say to each in terms of their what's the right way and what's the wrong way? Or is there a wrong or right way? Is it just, you know, whatever you want to be as a client?
Yeah, I think that's so true. I would echo that. I think Axel is probably the most inquisitive client that I've worked with. I don't think there's a wrong way. I think, you know, some people want to put it in our hands and say, call me when you've got a big update, and that's fine. And then those are the type of clients where we'll reach out when we're at a crossroads and say, here's where we are. We need your input on what, you know, the litigation objective is and where we're going to go with this. And then we have some clients who want to know a lot more. They want to be updated regularly on strategy and where we're at with things and what's going on and what can we expect. And then you kind of have the next level of client who thinks critically about things and has affirmative input to make. And that was sort of the, you know, the level Axel was at, which is awesome, because you get the opportunity to not only share what we know about the law and the process we're going through and why we're making the strategic decisions we are, but you get really intimate feedback from the client about what their goals are and how they view the case and where they want it to go. And that makes it easier to do our job.
Yeah, amen. You know, what I would say is, you know, be as involved as you want to be involved. It's your case, your life, and your right to ask as many questions as you want, you know, make as many constructive suggestions or even criticisms as you want. You know, it's a team effort. And so, you know, you're going to find, like, say you're on a football team, you know, some football players are going to be very sort of vocal about things and get on the other players. You know, that doesn't make them, you know, a bad teammate or a good teammate. That makes them, you know, an essential part of the team. And as a client, obviously you're the quarterback of the team. And so whether you're more comfortable not asking questions, whether you're comfortable asking questions, whether you're comfortable, you know, raising issues, any of those things is appropriate. So if you're a client in a personal injury case or thinking about bringing a personal injury case, don't be shy about having whatever level of dialogue or communication you feel most comfortable with. And so, Axel, so we heard you're a 21-year-old kid at UCSD, and it's relatively early in your academic tenure there, and then something happens which causes you to need eventually to hire a lawyer. So, and I know it's a very traumatic event, but if you're comfortable just telling our listeners and viewers a little bit about what happened to you.
Yeah, so during my second year or my sophomore year at UCSD, during the portion between winter and spring, so spring break, kind of that little gap, it's like a two-week gap, I was out with friends here at Mission Bay. So if you're at like a San Diego local, you should kind of know the general area. It's pretty common. And it was just one of those kind of scenarios where we have already gone before, one of those freak accidents or incidents where you just kind of have, we were going to go cruise driving, go off to a little like kind of island off to the side by Coronado, nothing out of the ordinary. And then, due to extenuating circumstances, kind of hit some wakes, have the accident, and just kind of, I guess the details of like the actual accident aren't necessarily too important to understand the general severity or magnitude. But what generally happened was my leg was amputated. It wasn't dirt, like cleanly amputated with the propeller. So my left leg above the knee was basically mauled in a way, was pretty bad. And then my right was kind of hit, but it wasn't to the degree where it needed to be amputated, so that it recovered pretty quickly. But it was a pretty traumatic experience, and it was, I guess, there was a moment where I got to see kind of the gruesomeness of it. So it wasn't necessarily just kind of like an accident where you kind of have a sudden impact, but rather that like you're still conscious and kind of processing things and then have to kind of like navigate the situation in order to survive. So it was kind of one of those definitely put me on my toes kind of scenarios, but retrospectively looking on it, definitely kind of gave me a little bit more of a confidence in myself because I understood how I would react in that situation. And I guess everyone always we kind of process things like, okay, I will behave this way when something like this will occur. But it's kind of reconforting knowing that I will behave this way if something like this reoccurs. So when I go through life, I guess a lot of the things I have a lot more confidence, even though most people wouldn't think that you would because of the accident, just because when you get it put in that situation and then you can overcome it and then you're able to, I guess, still make logical and clear decisions and you're able to kind of navigate the situation pretty fluently for the most part. It's like, okay, cool. If I can handle this, I can handle like a lot more things. So it kind of propels me a little bit to launch myself. But what ended up happening was I ended up going to a hospital. The left leg was mauled to a point where it basically wasn't going to be functional anymore. So I necessarily didn't get to see how bad the knee was, but I do recall when I saw just the severity of it. But that made it so that the amputation was above the knee instead of below the knee, which adds a lot of more complications in the way like you kind of live your everyday life, because if it was below the knee, I would be able to have a lot more mobility and stuff. So that kind of changes a little bit of the how you tackle the situation. But essentially, that's kind of what led me to look for a lawyer, was an accident or boating incident, which led me to lose my leg and kind of navigate through there.
Yeah, so, and we'll talk more about sort of your mental processing of the after effects and your kind of bounce back from this and actually your belief, you know, that having seen your reaction to this, you know, now you know you're strong and can basically handle anything. But, you know, let's start with this idea of looking, you know, for a lawyer. And so you're like a relatively young man at the time, but obviously with a highly functioning mind. So how do you, as a kind of young, and your parents are, well, I met them and spent a lot of time with mom. I thought mom was pretty sharp and very like a good, like she has a good mind. Maybe part of your good mind comes from her. But I would imagine she really hasn't had to go look for a lawyer before. So just tell us, like, you know, because maybe some of our listeners, you know, might be in the middle of looking for a lawyer. How did you, you know, go about trying to find a lawyer to help you?
Oh, so when my accident happened, I was recovering in the hospital, but I was still somewhat like functional, so I could use my hands and I had a computer and stuff. So I was communicating with my parents, who took a little bit of the initiative of kind of selecting a few just different firms and different lawyers kind of for me to choose from. So they would kind of get me a general pile of people that they would kind of look for. And I think the way that they were navigating it was kind of different searches on Google, as funny as that may sound, just kind of looking for lawyers in the local area. And I guess also kind of like looking around, I think they became a little bit more aware of marketing also because of the need for a lawyer. So I think one of the ways that they ended up contacting John's firm was through a commercial. So they kind of saw the commercial. Then I think they looked up the website online. And then from there kind of, hey, check this out. I think you should talk to this firm and just kind of see what they're about. So I was kind of doing more of the vetting, but they were doing the general selecting of firms of who I should just kind of call, like this person seems like a good fit for different reasons. And I guess for some of the things that kind of incentivize them to choose, or some of their vetting, where the quality of their website, I think, was one of the things that kind of gave them a little bit more of a trustworthiness, where it was like, okay, there's a little bit more of a general investment into the marketing. So it gives you a little bit more of a sense of comfort knowing that there's a little bit of legitimacy. That's kind of what was portrayed. So that was their general vetting or their process. And then in terms of me, the way I kind of did or narrowed it down from like a little bit of a larger pool to a more selective kind of three or two firms, where I was kind of a little bit more questioning and kind of like poking around to see what was going to be the most ideal for me, I would say was kind of on the one-on-one basis. So I think one of the things that was attractive was that as soon as my as soon as there was a bit of communication with some of the firms that seemed to have a higher interest, there was a in-person kind of meetup very soon afterwards. So that was important to me because it allowed me to at least get a little bit of a sense of the, who the person is, and that gives me a little bit more comfort.
Yeah. Well, that's pretty neat. So your it was your parents that kind of did the initial vetting, and among other things, they saw one of our TV commercials. Was the commercial that they saw, just for my understanding and tracking purposes, was it in English or Spanish?
Well, I'm not 100% sure on that one, to be honest. I didn't ask them. It was more of a, like, they kind of said it or kind of mentioned it, like, hey, this is what we were looking for. I would say it might have been in Spanish if I had to take a wild guess, just because my mom's kind of a really loves Univision, so that's kind of one of the channels that she kind of really focuses on. So maybe that I would presume.
So, you know, Corey, you got involved kind of once Axel came on board, but what I will say is, you know, back then I hadn't really spoken Spanish in a while, and I got a lot of awesome practice with mom, like. I really spent a good amount of time talking to her and speaking Spanish. And it's funny, you know, it's one of the things that inspired me to kind of up my level of Spanish, you know, and kind of return to using it all the time and really paying attention to it. But here's the thing, like, you raise an important point, and that is, and Corey, I'll direct this to you, my friend. And so, you know, his parents get a collection of lawyers, right? And then Axel, you know, they get kind of narrowed down to maybe two or three or whatever. And I think it's fair to say that Axel took his time and did a lot of vetting and a lot of, you know, consideration. And so, you know, what would you say, you know, here, I would say, look, you know, you have an injury like this, it's your life, you take as much time as you want, you know, to find the very best fit for you. You know, you sometimes, as a lawyer, you're on intakes, what we call them. And so, you know, you're dealing with folks that may or may not want to hire us. Well, they all want to hire us, you know. So what advice would you give in terms of, you know, looking for a lawyer to help you, Corey?
Good question. I'm on intakes right now, so it's relevant. You know, it's, I think you're absolutely right. It's a decision you want to get right. And when you, when it's going to affect your life the way it did with Axel or does with Axel, it's a decision you want to give time to. I do tell all my clients, or my potential clients when I'm talking to them, there's a lot of stuff that I'd like to get cracking on right away. And that includes, getting investigative reports, getting medical records, talking to witnesses, getting out preservation letters, which come from our office and say, you know, make sure you preserve all the surveillance footage, make sure you preserve any photographs or text messages, all that kind of stuff. And so there is a balance to strike there. And so in terms of timing, I mean, how much time, you don't want to, usually I tell people you don't want to sit too long. And so I think one of the things that Axel did, which I think is smart, is to have a meeting with the people you're considering hiring and, you know, find out, one, are these people, are they good lawyers? Are they competent lawyers? Obviously, the answer is yes every time if it's our firm. And then, is this somebody who I feel comfortable with going through this intimate and potentially difficult journey with? And I think that's an important thing. And I think we had that balance in our relationship, Axel, where, you know, hopefully you felt comfortable calling us and saying, here's what I'm concerned about. And you know, that I think that's an important part of getting the right attorney.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's a person that you're going to have a lot of trust in and a lot of interaction with. And so, yeah, you want to make sure that they're very, very highly competent, you know, but at the same time, I think you want to be comfortable with this person. It's a person you can kind of jibe with. And I'll say, like, when I first met Axel, first time I met him, like, I was like, man, I like this dude. Cause like, I knew like you had, kind of come from like me, you know, not the greatest financial circumstances as a kid. I knew that you were active physically, you know, which I like to be active physically. And I really liked, right, and you talk about the way you came back from the injury. I remember the first time I met you, Axel, like you had this like very high level of can do, like very, very like, you know, and you always say, you said like, oh, you imagine how you would be under these circumstances. And like when I meet a person like you, I'm like, oh, what if that happened to me? What would I be like? And I always envision myself all mopey and stuff, you know, and all depressed. And I'm sure you went through that, but at least, you know, in terms of outward appearance, it was like back to the books, back to making things happen. I'm going to come out better than ever. And I remember like, dude, you had like really amazing upper body strength. Like he could like transfer himself all around. It was like a monkey. Like I was like, oh man, this kid's a monster, dude. Like, how about this? Hopefully you don't say mean things, but what about the first time you met me? What was your impression? You know, what did you think?
So for me, I think there was also a very positive impression just because as much as I think there's a gravitation to people that I kind of like, I can see kind of a monster inside as well, because I can see that there's a bit of like a struggle slash progression. And physically speaking, I think also it's hard to like, not represent that. And I can see like it was immediate in John, like he was kind of a bigger guy that's kind of worked on his body. So that's something that I admire, because I understand, because I do it myself. So I understand how hard it can be, and especially how long it takes. So I understand that to get to a certain point, it takes a lot of dedication and a lot of hard work. And I kind of know the mentality and the mindset that it needs to be in order to get there. So I kind of attributed that a little bit to like what it would require as a fighter, like kind of like someone that doesn't give up or resilient. So that was definitely something that was kind of an attractive feature, where it's like, okay, this person, like, I can't help but kind of correlate how a person, like, presents themselves outwardly and, like, for example, how they take care of their body and stuff like that. So when there was, like, a sharpness to John, there was definitely a bit of, okay, this person definitely takes care of themselves. So I can feel that there's a sense of professionalism. There's a sense of kind of, I guess, dedication and hard work that was attributed. So that's something that was very attractive to me personally, because that's kind of similar to my own personality, where there's a bit of perseverance and hard work, and just that I would want someone that I could be able to, I guess, understand me and what I was going through. So that was something that I did look a little bit, it was an attractive thing.
Yeah. Cool. I'm glad. I've got to go to the gym. No. So here's an interesting thing that happened in your case, Axel, and that is, you know, we're going through the case, and then there's a motion that's filed, you know, involving issues of kind of maritime, and we say, okay, you know, Axel, with your permission, we're gonna grow our team and bring in these lawyers that we know that do nothing but this, just to be sure that we've got every base covered. And so first I'm going to like, before I ask you, I'm going to ask Corey. And so, you know, Corey, in this case, as you know, the defendants filed a limitation action, which, you know, we could have handled, you know, but just to be super, super careful, we said, okay, we're going to bring in these specialty lawyers. You know, it won't affect the fee that Axel pays. We'll just because we want to give him every resource and outcome, you know, possible. You know, what about that? Are there times like if a potential client or a person that suffered an injury is listening to this, are there times where, you know, lawyers will kind of add lawyers to the team, and, you know, kind of what do you think that means to the client?
Yeah, I think there's absolutely times. I mean, obviously our firm gets brought in by other lawyers a lot to help out with trials. So we're experienced with that. And, you know, like you said, it doesn't affect the fee that goes to the client. So we brought in some top-notch admiralty lawyers to deal with these boating laws. And, you know, doesn't change it doesn't change the outcome for Axel at all, other than now he's got some super high powered lawyers that that are very narrowly focused on this admiralty issue. And so I think you're right. We could have probably, you know, dived into the books on that interesting admiralty issue, but I think it's to the client's advantage and certainly a little less stressful for us to bring in some, you know, some lawyers who are very experienced in that.
Yeah. And, you know, Corey, you make a good point. Probably a very, very high percentage of our cases start with other lawyers. And so, you know, like actually you're talking about kind of looking on the internet and you find lawyers. And so that happens. A client will go hire a lawyer. And then all of a sudden the case gets bigger, you know, and more expensive and the possibility of trial. And the kind of what I'll call the small time injury lawyer doesn't have the resources, doesn't have the background, doesn't have the reputation that we do. So that lawyer brings us in. And I'll tell you what happens every time is the offer will go up by like, you know, 5 to 10 times. And so, you know, I always give credit to that lawyer that brings us in, you know, because they're doing right by the client. And really at the end of the day, probably they're doing right by themselves because, you know, the fee doesn't go up and they're still getting a part of the fee, but the recovery is what really goes up. And so, like, what did you think, you know, from your perspective, Axel, as a client, when we said, okay, you know, we suggest that we bring in these other lawyers to help us out?
I think that for me, at least because I'm a little bit extra precautious in the way I act and I understood how the magnitude of the situation, I wanted to do as I was a little bit maybe neurotic in the way that I was behaving, but it was definitely, I was asking a lot of questions in the sense, well, what's this? Because for me, I guess I don't like to be out of control of a situation. And for me, I understand that like a lack of knowledge is a lack of control, not really understanding that I have to place trust, right? And I guess in the beginning aspect, in the first stages, it's hard to trust. I think especially coming from an injury, maybe that had a little bit extra to do with it, where I was already in a bit of a critical situation and then mentally trying to recover and going through all that stress. It's a little bit difficult, but what kind of it gives you a little bit of comfort knowing that there's an extra element of special, like, I can't pronounce right now, but
specialization.
Thank you.
Yeah.
On a certain aspect, like maritime, because I know maritime, at least in my case, kind of changes the dynamics of the case a little bit. So there definitely was a comforting thing, and then there was another aspect that was comforting was the explanation that there's not going to be necessarily an additional charge to me as a client. So one of the things that I was kind of worried about was the fiscal aspect. So I'm trying to like maximize as much of the recovery for me as possible while trying to like optimize the service, the quality of service. So it's a little bit of a hard thing to juggle, especially when you're trying to take as much control as I was personally. But kind of going through the steps, okay, this doesn't change anything on your aspect, but this is how it's going to basically break it down for us, is definitely comforting. And then also understanding that the necessity is basically because it's a potential kind of like a bigger expertise will kind of allows you for potentially a bigger recovery. So that also kind of the explanation was definitely comforting and wasn't much of a problem to me, honestly.
Cool. Yeah. I think it was the right move. I'm glad we did it. And those guys are good guys. And so your case ended up settling. It didn't go to trial, you know. But to me, the more interesting thing about you is, you know, your sort of commitment to, you know, flipping the script on this and making it a positive in your life and kind of getting through this. You know, what I'll ask you is, you know, one day you're 20, at the time you were 20, right? Or 19, yeah. You're a 19-year-old kid, totally healthy. You know, future looks great. You're on top of the world. You know, you're lifting weights and being strong and chasing girls and doing all that stuff. And then all of a sudden, like, in the flashes something, you know, you're missing your leg above your knee. And, you know, so that kind of thing happens to people, you know, all the time, you know, whether it's losing a limb or becoming paralyzed, having a brain injury, you know, a terrible, you know, orthopedic injury. You know, so if someone like that is listening and, you know, what advice would you give them? Like, how the heck did you get through that and remain so strong and optimistic and focused on the future?
I would say that one of the kind of strategies that I used to kind of navigate it originally in the beginning kind of evolved over time just because of my own circumstances evolved. But in the very beginning, what I tried to do was basically launch myself in as many things as I possibly could. So I was hospitalized in a bed and I necessarily couldn't move, and moving and just being active is a big part of my life. So the way I thought about it was I had to keep my mind active as much as possible. So I kind of started, I didn't necessarily take the quarter off. So even though I was in spring break, I kind of took basically like a week and a half like off. And then basically, since it was online schooling at the time, just started up again from the hospital. And my mindset was, I kind of have to dive into as much, a chaotic event happened in my life. And it is so overwhelming at this point that it's kind of difficult to navigate. And as ironic as it may sound, I was like, okay, let me throw myself into more chaotic situations. Let me try to tackle the school. Let me not let this thing be the driving thing in my life. So I didn't want to make it so that, okay, I have to drop being school. I have to stop doing this. I'm now basically a disabled person that I have to take care of my body first. And the entire structure of my life is now taking care of my body. I kind of wanted to say, no, I'm just going to throw myself, we'll figure it out, we'll see. I probably won't succeed. And I kind of knew that I probably wasn't going to do as well as I hoped I was. But it was just, I got to throw myself out there and start figuring stuff out. Because if I kind of start letting myself be comfortable in this position of, it's okay to be kind of like not as active because I don't have it. Like, because the biggest thing when you go through something like this, in my opinion, is you have the biggest excuse now. It's like, I cannot do anything with my life. And basically, there's an excuse for it. And like in most people's scenario, there's abstract or kind of imaginary kind of things that we put in our brain where it's like, oh, I couldn't do this because of this. And one of the things for me, like John mentioned, was that I grew up in terms of financially very kind of impoverished, not necessarily the best resources. So because of that, I always thought like, okay, this isn't definitely, even though it makes the situation a little bit more difficult, it's not something that I can use or justification for me to like not succeed. And because I always had that mindset, finally there was something that's like, okay, this is definitely something that I could say, hey, like I couldn't, like, you know what I mean? Like I was doing great in life, like this was happening, and then bam, like what do you want me to do? Right? I could take like a little golden ticket to not do anything, to be lazy, which I already naturally end sometimes. I'm a little bit, I can't be smart, but I think I'm smart because I want to be lazy. So naturally I look for things to like do less work. I'm like, all right, how do I optimize this so I don't have to do as much work? It's like, oh, this would be the perfect thing to kind of basically say, if anyone ever questioned me down the line when I'm 40 or 30, I'm like, hey, look at this. Did you go through this? Did you know? And I didn't want to go through that mindset because I still had basically objectives and like kind of goals that I wanted to reach. And I understood that it's weird how the way I've been observing of life, I've noticed that oftentimes, like if you kind of keep pursuing a little bit in the same path, as crazy as it may sound, it seems to turn out just fine. So my thing was like, all right, something crazy happened to me. I'm going to start throwing myself in as much things as I possibly can. I'm going to pretend like this just didn't happen. We're going to be moving. We're going to act like we're going to try to go superhero mode here, and we're going to fail. We're going to crash hard. But this is kind of part of like the little hero's journey. Like that's kind of, I was trying to take in a little bit more of an abstract view. And because I threw myself, honestly, I didn't have as much time to worry about the gravity of the situation. It allowed me to say, okay, well, I have to start problem solving. And it made me start problem solving things that most people tend to try problem solving a little bit later. So they kind of go through a little bit of the depressed stage where you're kind of sad, mopey, you don't necessarily want to move. But since I threw myself in those scenarios, when I kind of reached them later down the line, I was already a few steps ahead. So navigating those situations was a lot easier because I had to kind of built a little bit of a net or a little bit of a structure to how I was planning on living my life when I was a little bit more of a maybe the adrenaline was still kicking in from the accident. I was like, no, I'm going to get over this. So I was very self-conscious, and I think that helped me kind of navigate it. But yeah, it was throwing myself in there and pretending like it didn't, like it wasn't a problem. And then when the problems started arising, because there naturally are, we'll figure them out then. That was the biggest mentality switch.
Yeah, I like it, man. I like that approach. And, you know, like, I certainly can't say, oh, you know, like you said, you have a built-in excuse, right? And we always have, though, every day we have a built-in excuse to do or to not do. And then in life, you know, you were, after all the struggle, given that ticket that you said, your golden ticket to being lazy, and chose not to take it. Instead, you went the other way. And I remember, like, when you remained enrolled in school or enrolled for the new quarter, I was like, man, like, that's amazing. Like, because I would have, I don't know, but, you know, now that I met you, I wouldn't, but, and we've talked about it, but I remember at the time I was like, man, I think I'd probably take the quarter off, you know, like, but dude was like hitting the books hard. I remember, like, so, I mean, what's your takeaway from that, Corey? Like, would you use that to kind of influence your decisions in life?
I can certainly relate to the concept of having excuses. And I think, you know, one of the things that always struck me about Axel was, for a person of his age, the presence he has to that kind of stuff. And because I started to catch myself doing things like that, at, you know, maybe when I was about 30. And so it took me a little longer to get there. But I will say, you know, one of the things that Axel said that reminded me of a theme in some of our cases is, you know, the priority to focus on your body when you're injured and to get healed, and versus, for example, you know, like you said, almost pretending like it didn't happen and focusing on other things. And it's just so funny to see how some things work for some people. And, you know, I have clients who have major orthopedic problems, but they got kids to feed. Or they've got, you know, other issues like that that make it very hard for them to just say, okay, I'm just gonna do stretching and PT now and rest. And they ask me, you know, can I go back to work? Can I do things like that? And, you know, it's a difficult balance to strike. And we're always trying to find out, you know, what's the right path here, but it's not always obvious.
Yeah, yeah. Like I will say that, you know, you bring up kind of a tangential point, but I'll share with you, Axel. And I don't, you know, like you kind of like figured it out on your own, but sometimes, like, you know, we'll get clients and they'll be like, oh, you know, should I wait to go back to work until the case is over, or should I wait to do this before the case is over? And, you know, I don't think we've ever been that kind of law firm, you know, like we're like, look, you know, you getting your life back and your health back is the most important thing. Like, if it makes you happy to go back to work and you're able to go back to work, go back to work. You know, we don't want you like milking the thing for extra money, you know, because I think in the end, you know, you lose credibility and actually the case value goes down. And I think everybody loves a hero, like you said, you know, a person that perseveres and endures and, you know, tries to get through it, you know, with a strong chin. Yeah, get back on it, man. So, so what's going on in your life now, Axel? What are you all about? Like, what do you see happening, you know, with you in the next 5 to 10 years? Tell us a little bit about you.
Man, I would say that I have no idea what the next 10 to 5 years are going to look like. I think there was a general plan that was kind of already structured. That I think the end goal was somewhat generally the same, but the medium in order to get there was a little bit different. It was a little bit more structured, slow pace, kind of compounding interest over time. But based on this, the scenarios and the situation, I guess a lot of my mentality has changed. And it's funny because the injury itself also kind of changed my mentality, as funny as that may sound. I guess my day-to-day life, like the little things, for example, like I'm not like able to run anymore. And I mean, hopefully with new prosthetics over time, that's one of the things that we're working on. So we're working on getting different prosthetic models and then kind of getting adapted to that. Hopefully like in 10, 15 years, Neuralink gets a little bit more evolved and I become a cyborg. So maybe I'm ahead of the game, hopefully. But in terms of how life goes, it's weird. I guess there's a lot more strategy when I do things. Like since I can't have the spontaneity that I used to, like it's weird because like when you lose your leg, your reflexes, for example, if something falls, right, you have to move out of the way, that goes away. And that might not seem like a big deal in the terms of how you frame the way of thinking, but it's changed a lot of my personality because now I have to operate in a stance, for example, when I go into a scenario, and as silly as this may sound, I understand that I can't exit the scenario. Like, I know that I'm there, and I'm probably going to be the last person to leave, right? So in terms of, like, even dangerous situations or just in everything, right, the way I think, the way I have to walk, it's very much more controlled and calculated. And in the way I do things in life, it's kind of – it sucked a little bit of the joy in the sense where, like, I used to be a very spontaneous person where, for example, I'd wake up one day and as a healthy, able-bodied person, okay, cool, I'm going to go here, I'm going to go there, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. Now there's a lot more planning in the way I do things. Like, when I wake up, like, I have to know that, okay, for example, right now I don't have the greatest model. Like, the dimensions on my leg aren't as great, so I understand that my mobility is a little bit more limited. So in terms of how I'm going to get there, what I'm going to do, how I'm going to, like, do things – that's changed. So because of that, it's also changed the life trajectory because I wanted to be a little bit more spontaneous in the way I did things. And now when I have a little bit more freedom on being able to do them, I can't necessarily exercise that freedom because of the able-bodiedness isn't necessarily there. So there's a little bit of a balancing act trying to go on currently where I'm trying to necessarily get myself to an active place where I feel comfortable being able to go out and do things where I'm not necessarily going to be in pain or I'm not going to be in discomfort. In terms of career, in terms of that, that's definitely changed because with the legal settlement, so as John explained, and I'm definitely a go-getter, active kind of personality. So my mindset, as soon as this happened, was like, well, I'm not done here. It's like, I'm still going to be working. I'm still going to be an active, productive member of society. And now I understand that my body isn't going to be what's going to be the productive thing, right? It's going to be my mind. So I have to start getting, like, working on my mind and, like, actively building it as much as possible. But because of that, I understand that I don't need to be conservative, or I am conservative, I'm smart and like can try to be intelligent, but I don't have to be as conservative in the way where I have to live a life. For example, the legal settlement, use that as, okay, now I get to have to manage this and how do I spend it so that I don't waste this, right? And I have to like trickle it down, right? Until like I don't spend this. No, it's like, okay, I'm gonna use this to level my life up. I'm gonna use it to invest in myself, my learning, the experiences that I have in life. And then because I don't have the ability to be maybe as able-bodied, I have to invest in myself in ways where I can still produce value to other people, but in a way that's a little bit different now. So because of that, it's kind of changing the framing of what I'm thinking, how I'm behaving. And also just kind of, like John said, I also in the beginning, I didn't come from a very affluent family. So there's definitely a switch in the way of being able to do things and just kind of the freedom that comes along with being able to have a little bit more money at my disposal, because I did take an option to be a little bit more kind of in control of my own finances, just because that's just my personality. I like to be in control. And like when I mess up, I want to mess up on my own account, because when I don't, I like to take all the accountability on me, because that's how I figured I learned the most. When I divert it to other people, I'm like, well, it's somebody else's fault, right? And then the learning aspect doesn't really register in me because the responsibility wasn't mine, right? I didn't mess up. Somebody else did. And I don't like blaming other people for the things. I like to take as much responsibility because I like to feel that, okay, I messed up. And I think it helps me learn, as crude as that might sound. Like, I don't like to say I like to fail, but I think that's partially why I throw myself out there as much as possible, because I'm not afraid to fail. I understand that through failure, I kind of grow rapidly. And because of my lack of fear or a failure, I've found that I've been able to grow at a faster rate than other people. So that's my little secret to like how I tackle things. But yeah, that's kind of what generally is going on. There's a lot of kind of chaotic things going on. And with the markets going on right now, a little bit haywire, nobody necessarily know where the economy's going. I'm trying to pay attention to that as much as possible and then navigate this kind of school, because there's a scholarship where I still have to navigate that. So it's just a lot of juggling. It's fun. It's fun, though. It keeps me a little bit active and keeps me a little bit – there's a lot of things to do, and you know, it makes me excited.
Oh, awesome, man. It's good to see you excited. We saw you out at our boxing event this weekend. It was awesome to see you out there. Thank you for coming. like I said, you know, you're one of our favorite clients. You know, you're a real, you know, person to teach us that hero's journey that you talked about. And so always awesome to talk to you. Thanks for coming down and doing the podcast. And man, I feel like I'll drive over. I think you're living kind of nearby here, and we'll grab a meal and catch up, because you always have such interesting things to say. Would you ever consider a career in motivational speaking? That's my last question to you.
I think I would, but personally, in my personality, how it is, I think I would want to accomplish something first. Like, I would like to tackle, like, even though, like, I might have already accomplished a couple or overcame a couple of obstacles in my head, like, there's still something out there that I want to conquer still. So I'm still in that phase of trying to, like, conquer and slay dragons, to use metaphors. And I think after I get through that period of time where I feel like I gave it my all into something, or I feel like some sort of mastery, because I have the liberty to do a lot of things now, but I myself don't feel like, I feel like that imposter syndrome is still there, and I don't want to necessarily give advice if I'm not myself comfortable fully there. I don't want to be, I want to maintain my integrity. I feel like I could kind of be a motivational speaker because of the craziness of my life, even as short as it been, and kind of give advice, but I don't necessarily know if that would be a genuine, where I feel like I kind of stand strong where I say those words, you know what I mean? I feel like I still have something to prove to myself, and because of that, I would think maybe down the line, if I can do something, I want to prove to myself, am I worthy of giving advice? And like, I don't necessarily feel I'm there yet.
Amen, man. How's the humility through it all? So, thank you so much for being here, Axel. Like I said, I look forward to, you know, grabbing you in Little Italy for a meal soon to catch up. Corey, what are your sort of closing words or thoughts to this episode of Trial?
It's just great to see you, Axel. And like I said, when we were wrapping up the case, you know, and to echo what John said, definitely a client that we'll be tracking and checking and looking forward to updates from.
All right. Well, thank you guys for being here. And thank you again, everyone, for listening to another episode of Trial Files, where real personal injury survivors talk about their real personal injury lawsuit. In this episode, I was blessed to be joined by my good buddy and fellow trial attorney, Corey Garrard, and one of our very favorite and most inspirational clients, Axel Marquez Cornejo. Thank you for listening. Look forward to our next episode, and everybody take care.